You're listening to the Country Chat Podcast with your host, Dom.
Subscribe,
give a five-star rating, and follow us on Twitter
at @country_chat.
And stay up to date.
Hi there. You're listening to the Country Chat Podcast with me, Dom. Today I've got a wonderful guest from Birmingham. Her name's Charlotte Young. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, everyone.
How are you doing today?
I'm not too bad, thank you. I haven't lost my mind yet during the podcast, during lockdown. So, it's not too bad.
I can imagine. I mean, you've been doing some live streams recently, haven't you?
I have. I've been trying to keep as active as I can with everyone on my pages, just to keep them in the loop. So I've done quite a few, basically a weekly one, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's been quite nice to do as many lives as possible, really.
See, I've been. I was watching one today, one that you did on Easter Sunday, the Nashville Meets World one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of these songs that you played in there, is there any chance they'll be on your new EP?
So there are quite a few of them will be. I can't say which ones.
I won't.
But that there is an announcement coming very, very, very soon as to which ones will be going on. But you have heard all of them, which will be going on the EP.
Awesome. So yeah, if anybody wants to check out Charlotte, they can check her out at Nashville Meets World on the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Or any social media, really. I try and go on there as much as I can.
Awesome. So your actual Facebook page, you've got your own little fan group on there, which is, you just search for Charlotte Young.
Absolutely. And it's been climbing lately, which is crazy. Like, we started the year with less than 1,000 followers and we're drawing in on 2,000 now. So it's just like...
Everything keeps growing and growing and growing.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to see as well, because your debut single, Whiplash, mm-hmm. went to number one.
I can't believe it.
I mean, I was going to ask, you know, what's the emotions that are going through your head right then? I mean, I was watching the actual charts and I was refreshing every so often and it was like, yep, it's number four, it's number two, now it's number one. It's like, yay!
It was rough because, like, before I went to bed on the 19th, about 11:30, I'd charted at, like, number six or something. And I started crying because I couldn't believe it. I didn't even think it was going to chart. So I was just like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. And then I woke up in the morning because I have a full-time job as well, unfortunately, at the moment, that isn't music. And I woke up about 7:00. And I ran into my mum's room and I went, Mum, I'm number two. And just started crying and crying and crying because I couldn't believe it. And I got to work, made myself a cup of tea, and it had become number one.
Oh,
and
wow.
I did like a little dance. I couldn't believe it. I was in shock for the whole day.
So there was no champagne celebrations. It was a cup of tea.
Well, I had a tea because I didn't know it was number one. And then I went to my friend's house. This was before lockdown, thank goodness. I went to my friend's house and had a bottle of wine.
Oh, wow. What wine was
it? So it was a great time for me. So I have extraordinarily trashy taste in wine. And I will only drink box wine or like Echo Falls.
Oh, fair enough.
I believe it was an Echo Falls.
Wine's wine. I mean, I love the cheaper wines. The cheaper, the better.
Cheaper, the better, exactly. I can't be dealing with the expensive wine. I'm just not classy enough for that.
I mean, I'm just a true northerner where anything that's cheap, I'll take.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So we was talking just before we actually started recording this that you're from Birmingham.
Yes.
And I absolutely love the Brummie accent. People say it's one of the horrible accents, but I love it because it's what I grew up with.
It gets a really bad rep.
I know. Yeah, I was originally born in West Bromwich, near Birmingham. And Smethwick?
Smethwick, which if people are wondering where they've heard that before, the wonderful Julie Walters is from Smethwick.
See, it's all famous people all congregating around the same area.
Exactly, it's meant to be.
I mentioned the Nashville Meets World. You did it was all acoustic.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
What do you prefer playing? Do you prefer playing acoustically or do you like being as part of like a band and having the whole production set up?
I love a little bit of both, if I'm honest. I love, if depending on the song, if it's a very gentle song, there was a song I played called Half a Bottle.
Yeah.
Which was written on my bathroom floor with just an acoustic guitar. And I like that. I like it as just plain because I think it's quite raw.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I'm best friends with my band. Like, my boyfriend's my drummer and my best friend of like 10 years is my guitar player. So I have a lot of fun on stage because we know the songs inside out and we know each other very well. So yeah. I like it in that sense too, because it gives it a full like lift.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love both. I don't know if I could pick.
Your boyfriend's a drummer and your best friend's a guitarist.
Yes.
At what point do you go to your friends and say, all right, I'm a singer, do you want me part of a band? At what point was that?
Well, I've known, so Carrick's my guitar player. Hi, Carrick, if you're listening. And I've known him since I was about 15. And I started, I was doing like open mics and stuff around the area.
Yeah.
And this guy called Dave, who was in a band with someone else at the time, was like, oh, would you like to be in a band? And I was like, yeah, okay. And I met Carrick, he was the guitar player. And then that band sort of fell apart for a bit. Like, nothing major, it just didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And then about 3 years after that, me and Carrick started hanging out more because I started running open mics. And then I was like, right, I need a live band if I want to do this. If I want to go out there and get my music out there, I need someone to help me record. And I need a band because the songs I write, I find, often need a bit of a boost.
Yeah.
So I need myself a live band. Who better to ask than Carrick, who knows my music inside out? And at this point, I had just met my boyfriend, and it had been about, we'd been together about a year before he before I was like, do you want to give it a go on drums? Because he had been like playing cajon and all sorts, and he's always had an interest in it, but never like sat down with it.
Yeah.
And he's been playing about 2 years now, and he just loves it. So he just sort of naturally came into the fold, which is really cool to see. I'm on the hunt for a bass player at the moment, but other than that, I've known quite a few musicians who I've been like in little projects with and stuff. And it never usually becomes a question of friendship or band. It's usually both.
Yeah.
So it's quite nice because I just think you're not going to get anywhere if you start being bitter with each other.
Oh, no.
So if it don't work out, it doesn't work out. It's completely fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there going to be, if say for whatever reason, the band was to split up and you had to get new players, there wouldn't be any rift between you and your boyfriend or you and your friends?
Not at all. I've always said to them, if you ever get a better opportunity, please go and take it. Because what sort of friend would I be to go, oh, you've been offered a big tour with someone, you can't go? Nah, it doesn't work that way. I just think you should be happy for each other's success. And if that doesn't mean that you get to have success together, but they get to have it separately, then that's completely fine, because I'd like to think they'd do the same, and I know they would. So, yeah, it's quite nice. Hopefully it won't be a Fleetwood Mac moment.
Last thing you want. We mentioned that you've played some of your songs already that's going to be on your new EP.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you write most of the songs? Like you mentioned, one of them was on your bathroom floor. What about the others? Yeah.
So a lot of them are bedroom songs because I'm a bedroom musician.
Yeah.
You know, I've learnt guitar in my bedroom for years and years and years. So I usually sit down with my guitar and I'm going away. And then I'm like, ah, I like this. And it usually happens that way. There's a couple, they're not on the EP, but there's a couple of songs I've written before that have happened in a rehearsal studio. So there's a song that I didn't play called Lonely in My Dreams, where I was like, Carrick, I've got this idea. I had a dream about it. It's in my head. And I come up with a line, and it just sort of carried on from there.
Yeah.
And we pretty much wrote most of it in the rehearsal. And then I went away about 2 weeks later and I needed a second verse. So I turned all the lights off in my room and I just sat there and played it. And I was like, I wonder. And it worked.
Do you write songs using like a traditional pen and paper, or do you do it on your iPhone?
If I get an idea, I record it on my phone and I'll note it down on my phone. But the physical song pretty much always goes on paper because I just like having a copy of it more than anything.
Now, when you're writing songs, do you think of a melody as you're writing it, or is it just the case of, oh, I like this structure of words, we'll put a melody to it later?
It's a bit of both. It usually is always lyrics first, but occasionally the lyric and the melody happen at the same time. So I'll have something in my head, like, I'll, for example, with Whiplash, I had do and you don't and you will and you won't, and I couldn't figure out where the rest of it was going to go, but that's what I had.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to go from there now.
You see, I just released a review of Whiplash, and
thank you, because your words were so nice. So thank you for that.
I mean, I put you in the same ballpark as like Gabby Barrett and Kelsea Ballerini.
Top. I can't believe it. Thank you for that, because when I read that, I was like, these are two of my favourite artists at the moment. So thank you, because that was really, really kind.
But yeah, just to, as an explanation on what I do when I review music, is I'll look at the music, I'll play it once, and I'll close my eyes and I'll picture where I am. I'll then play it again, and then see where, if I'm still in that same place, and then I'll play it again. I think I play it like 10, 11, 12 times when I actually review something.
Nice. Thanks for getting the streams up. And
that's all it's about. It's about getting those levels up. And yeah, it's about then trying to listen to the music, trying to see how it's all put together, trying to see if there's any like hidden tracks. Now, the one thing that I liked was the lap pedal steel was just ever so mellow through it. You couldn't really, it wasn't overpowering, it wasn't overly loud. It was just right, and it was, yeah, everything about it was, it was a real feel good song. But yet it's about the kind of topic that Whiplash is about. It's like almost being thrown within a relationship. What's when you're writing that song, what is your interpretation as you were writing it?
So the key thing to remember with this song is this is actually, although it's in first person, I wrote it from the outside.
Yeah.
Because it was a friend who, she come over one day to mine and she was like, I feel like he's giving me whiplash. She was on about this guy she just met.
Oh, wow.
On a night out, which I was present at, so I remember the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she come over and she was like, I don't know what to do because he keeps changing his mind. He's giving me whiplash. And I was like, noted.
Clever.
And I sort of saw her sort of tear herself apart a bit in the brain. And it's not nice to see when anyone, specifically someone you care about, but anyone in particular, if they're destroying themselves over something that could be solved very easily, it's frustrating, but it's also deeply sad.
Yeah.
So I sort of had that in that type of mindset. And I was like, well, how would I feel if I was in that situation? And the first thing to do is to be like, it's sort of like bargaining.
Yeah.
Like, well, why don't you do this? Like, you could do that if you wanted to. You know, it's sort of almost like a desperation type thing. And that's sort of how it came to be, really. See, and I think I wanted to give that feeling.
Yeah. The great thing with the song is it's bizarre because it's such a feel-good song. It's almost like a summery song. But yeah, like you say, you know, it's somebody getting whiplash from someone else's feelings. When you're thinking of, like, we talk about melody and the whole feel of a song, is that the kind of feeling that you had in mind when you was actually writing it?
Yes. So there was one theme that I wanted the whole way through, and that was a car crash.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be abrupt. I wanted it to make you go, oh, make you stop and think, what's this? Because when I took it to the producers, which are the wonderful Danny McMahon and Andrea Succi at Puzzle Maker, it wasn't going to make the EP. It wasn't even going to be a single because I wasn't sure on it and like how I wanted it to be produced, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I played it to them and they went, well, you need to do that because this is a great song and I think it'd be really strong for you to put it on there. And they sort of helped it come to life. And without me telling them what I wanted, they sort of just made it happen and it just worked. But what I did say to them is that I wanted an abrupt ending and I want like a stop and start and the bit at the end where it's just the drums.
Yeah.
I always wanted that. I just didn't know how I wanted it to get there.
See,
so that's what I wanted.
A lot of people have been saying great things about, you know, Danny McMahon and Andrea Succi. What's your opinions? Obviously, you can be as nice or you can be as nasty as you want. I know you're going to be nice. So what's your, when you first met Danny and Andrea, what was your first thoughts and feelings?
So the first time I met Danny and Andrea, I was actually a little bit concerned because I'm from Birmingham. I don't know Bristol at all. And they said, you know, can you come down? We really want to work with you. I was like, okay. Went down there. And because of where the studio is, it's like in an industrial part of Bristol. I was like, oh my God, this is my end. This is what's going to happen. And then I got there and they were the nicest people in the world. And they let me ask them 1,000 questions, which was great. Because I imagine it can be quite frustrating having someone ask you 1,000 questions you've answered before.
Yeah.
But I'd never recorded. I'd never done anything like that. So I was asking really stupid questions that probably were really obvious. But because I was nervous as well, I just wanted to make sure that it was the right thing for me. And they were patient. They were wonderful. And then when it came to actually recording, if I didn't want something going in, it didn't go in.
Yeah.
They'd advise. They'd go, you know, try this because this is more in keeping in the style. And I'd go, nah, I don't like that. So it wouldn't go in.
What was it? Sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, carry on.
I was just going to ask, you know, what's the sort of time frames, you know, from the moment you think of the song to then writing it and then the actually going to Bristol, going into the recording studio and then actually laying down the tracks? What kind of time frames was that?
So it was a lot longer than some others, and that's because, like, I had a full-time job and I had quite a few, like, personal things going on that I couldn't really do.
Yeah.
You know, with going down. Whiplash is quite an old song. I wrote it like 3-4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Because it was never going to go on, you know. So it wasn't until I was in pre-production that I played them a bunch of songs that they chose it because they really believed in it. They felt it was strong. And then when they laid the demo down, I agreed with them, completely agreed. But it was quite a while. But in terms of from the first meeting, which I want to say was like, I feel like it might have been February or March last year. And then I got into the studio around August after pre-production. And then it was a bit split after that. But then there was 3 months of building up for the release and getting the masters back. I got the masters back in December. And then it was like 3 months after is the release.
Yeah.
So it built up the, you know, the hype for it. So it's not actually as long as people might think, but it definitely could have been shorter. But that's because I had like a lot of personal stuff going on. But hopefully next time when I go to record, it'll be a little bit sharper, a bit quicker as well.
Yeah. You've been to the recording studios. You've been to Puzzle Maker. You've got your new EP all laid down, ready to start the actual social push. Are you excited?
Yes. I'm very, very, very excited. I'm terrified because I was terrified with Whiplash. And anyone who knows me, including Danny Andrea and Rachel over at Scarlet River Management, will tell you that I sat there the whole time going, it's going to be a failure, no one's going to like it, I'm absolutely terrified, what's going to happen? And then it ended up hitting number one. So I get very in my own head sometimes. I'm a bit scared, but I just want people to hear it.
Yeah, we all get a bit, you know, very self-doubty, very much, you know, I shouldn't be here, you know, what is going on? And then obviously for you to hit number one, it's just like it shows to you exactly that you deserve to be here. And you do. I'm excited for this new EP.
Thank you very much. It is like a validation thing. And for as long as I can remember, it may not be the healthiest thing, but I've always thrived on approval.
Yeah.
So for someone going, that's really good, I really like it, that really helps me. And if it's someone I don't know, it's even better because they've got no agenda. They don't have to be nice. They can be completely honest.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's my mom, although she says she's not biased, she'll be like, no, this is great. And I'll be like, well, I don't believe you because you're my mom. And she's like, well. So it's exciting.
What was her opinions when you first played Whiplash to her?
She basically, I didn't think she fully understood what was happening in terms of me going down to Bristol. I think she knew I was recording something, but she didn't know the ins and outs or anything. She didn't really get it. And then I come home with this demo, because the Puzzle Maker demos are quite impressive. They sound like a finished product.
Yeah.
They're not mixed or mastered or anything, but they're pretty solid for a demo. Like, it's not just a guitar and a vocal. And I played it to her, and she went, oh, my God, that's amazing. And she was really, really pleased with it. And then every time I went down, she was like, what have you got for me? What can I hear now?
Awesome. So has she heard everything as well from your new EP?
She's heard everything and she's very excited. She keeps changing her mind on what her favourite track is. So that's always a good sign.
Oh, it is. It shows that there's multiple brilliant tracks.
Absolutely. And I did like a little listening party when I received my masters. So it was my guitar player, my boyfriend, my best friend, and my family. So my sister, my brother, my sister, my dad, and my mum. And we all sat round, and I hadn't heard them yet, my masters. I hadn't heard them all. I connected it to a speaker, I pressed play, and we all went, oh, we tried to, like, plan an order. So, yeah.
You've got your order, you know, where you've played it, where you like mm-hmm. songs. Have you got an order for when you actually do go back to gigging?
So, when it does happen, I was supposed to be having a launch party in May.
Yeah.
And I believe, I mean, it's definitely not going to happen now because they've rearranged the date. But I was supposed to have a launch party the day after release. And obviously that got cancelled. So it's been changed to August. And it probably won't be an official release party as such, because obviously the EP would have been out for a bit then.
Yeah.
So instead it will be more like a party, really. Like a celebration that quarantine's finally over and we can perform as much as we like. I will probably do Whiplash either first or last.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a fun opener because people know it. And it would also be a fun closer because it'd be the song that people know. So I'm not quite sure where the rest of them are going to go just yet. But I will come up with an order at some point.
Is there anything you can tell me about the EP? Like release date or anything like that?
I can't tell you the date, but that's because I'm literally making an announcement this weekend.
Awesome.
So I believe it's Saturday the 18th. The 18th, I'm making a statement. So you will know the date then and you'll know the name. So that's definitely something to look forward to. What I will tell you is that it's not called Whiplash. The EP is not called Whiplash.
Damn.
And it's also not self-titled.
Okay.
So I was going to do that. I was really tempted to do that. But I might do that for the next EP, maybe. Yeah. But it is named after a track.
Okay.
On the EP. And it's four tracks. It's sort of... There's a good mix on there. There's a song on there that I like to call a truck song, which is typical summer. You know, you've got your windows down, you're having a great time. It's one of them. And it's quite beachy as well.
Yeah.
Not quite summery. But I think there's something to take from each song. So I hope that it's something that people like. There's pedal in all of them because I'm a pedal fiend. Shout out to Kev Bartholomew, who laid down the pedal for me. When I first heard him play, I cried in the studio.
Really?
He's amazing. Yeah.
That's awesome.
He's absolutely amazing. And I think it was more overwhelmed that it was coming together, but also the case of, is that pedal's such a beautiful instrument, and when you use it properly, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind.
So obviously we know what Whiplash is like as a fully produced single.
Mm-hmm.
Your new EPs, are they similar in fashion or...?
Definitely. There's a song on the EP, which is actually what the EP is named after.
Yeah.
And that's big. It's a big, beefy song. Similar to Whiplash. You know, there's lots of drums, there's lots of electric guitars. There's organ in it, there's all sorts. So it's quite a beefy one.
Yay!
Yay!
You see, I always say that country music isn't about having all your guitars, you know, your lap pedal steel, your, you know, everything that goes with it. It's mainly about the songwriting, but you can't deny that when you listen to a lap pedal steel, it's like heaven. I always end up getting goosebumps. I mean, it's one of those sounds that you can kind of imitate with other instruments, but it's not that same feel.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember saying to my mom when it was being produced and my dad, like, there's going to be pedal steel in it. And my mum went, what's that? Because she didn't fully understand.
Yeah.
And I played an Eagles song, which it features in, because my mum's a giant Eagles fan. Played it to her and she went, oh, I like that. That will work really well. And then lo and behold, when it was put in, she was like, I can't imagine the songs without them now.
Yeah. Is she a professional now at knowing lap pedal steels?
Oh, yeah. She's like, that's pedal. I'm like, well done.
That's awesome. Going into country music in general for you, at what point did you think to actually, yes, country music's my genre?
To be honest, I have not actually had a journey of having other genres.
Yeah.
Because when I started picking up guitar, I was into country music anyway. So, like, I had Carrie Underwood on a lot. Like, the Some Hearts album was the one I had on constantly.
Yeah.
And early Taylor Swift, I listened to all the time. This was must have been about 13, 14. Like, I played it all the time. Still do. Still a giant Taylor fan. Still a giant Carrie fan. And I sort of got into country music throughout that as well. I'd always grew up listening to Dolly and Shania. So I had that as well. And I was like, when I started crafting my own songs, it sort of just fell into the fact that they were similar to these other songs that I'd listened to. And I think it's because it's an influence thing more than anything. And then when I made my journey going out into open mics, I did country covers and no one knew what it was.
Really?
Because they were like, I've not heard this song before. Yeah, because like country music really has only become huge in the UK probably in the past maybe 3-4 years.
Yeah.
So when I was doing them, when I was about 15, 16, no one really knew what the songs were unless it was a Dolly Parton song or a Shania song. They didn't necessarily know, you know, Carrie Underwood or anything like that. And I started writing my own songs. I was like, yeah, this is definitely really country. Like, this is what I want to do. And I sort of felt like a stick in the mud because I didn't know anyone else who did country music in Birmingham at that point. And then as I started to gig more, I met more people who did country music. And then it just sort of fell into it, really.
Yeah.
I didn't want to change it because I was like, I don't really want to become a pop artist. I don't believe in it. Like, pop music's great. Love it. But it's just not me.
Is there any, like, pop music that you listened to growing up or anything like that?
Oh, yes. So I have a very varied music taste. I love the 70s more than anything in the world.
Oh, yeah.
So ABBA's a big one for me.
Oh, ABBA's great for everybody.
ABBA is great for... That is so true. They're amazing. ABBA, love them. But then I love... Like, I love Christina Aguilera growing up too.
Yeah.
And Shania Twain is a country pop artist. So, loved her. There were quite a few, really. Like, I do love pop music. It's just the genre that I probably wouldn't go into, mainly because I love acoustic instruments. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like mandolins, stuff like that. Love it. But then, having said that, I love classic rock. Absolutely love classic rock and Motown.
Yeah.
So I'd say there's been a really mixed bag growing up of music that I love, and still to this day.
Do you ever find that listening to music in the past has like influenced the way you write songs?
Oh, 100%. I'm a sucker for imagery and metaphors.
Yeah.
So for me, the big two growing up were like Aerosmith and Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Aerosmith, my favourite band ever. I saw them at Download and I cried for like 2 hours.
Oh, but nice.
I was so overwhelmed by how amazing they were that I couldn't get it together. And you've got to remember with Fleetwood is that Rhiannon, which is what like one of their big hits, of course, is comparing a woman to a black cat because she's so mysterious.
Yeah.
And I loved that. So I'd say I was always big into lyrics. And same with like, you know, same with like Stevie Wonder, love him as well.
Yeah.
And ABBA, because ABBA's lyrics are great.
Well, the great thing, like what I mentioned with the reviews and the whole imagery, it's great to just close your eyes and just picture where something's taking you and try and put you in that moment. I always find you can get a better sense of the song as well when you just try and close off the world around you and then just picture yourself in that moment.
Absolutely. And I like to be transported. And I think everyone likes to be transported because it feels a bit more personal then.
Yeah.
You know, so I love all that stuff. And the 70s is a big influence.
Can't be the 70s.
You can't. It's just golden era.
Is there anything recently that you listen to? What's on your current like playlist now when you listen to music? Not just country, but everything.
Okay, so obviously I'm a giant Taylor Swift fan.
Yeah.
So I've had Lover on repeat since it's come out. Like, so non-stop.
Full disclosure, I'm a Taylor Swift fan as well. I wasn't to begin with, I'll admit.
Amazing.
I'll admit, that's but good. I was converted and I've kind of stuck with it since and it's... The music's been great. Lover especially. The man's been great.
The man is such a hit.
Yeah.
Like, it's just brilliant. But I love her. And I've loved her for a really long time. So I've followed every album she's done. And Lover was a big one. I've been listening to a lot of Diana Ross lately because I'm supposed to be going to see her.
Ah.
whether that will happen, I don't know, because they haven't said if it's been cancelled. So I don't know. But Diana Ross has been one that I've been listening to quite a bit. There's a band called Dirty Honey, who are sort of like a rocky, they're sort of like early AC/DC style. So I like them. They're really cool.
I'm just writing that down now so I can have a check out later.
If you're a fan of like classic rock, like AC/DC, Aerosmith, Skinhead, yeah, you'll like them. You'll like them a lot.
Yeah. I mean, the great thing with me is I was brought up with a vast, you know, a vast array of music. So it was, mm-hmm, you know, it was everything from heavy metal to rock, yeah, to pop to, you know, like Clubland classics, what you listen to in Ibiza, and it, mm-hmm, literally everything you can think of, I was played in front of me, and you pick it up and you pick up the different vibes you get from different songs and the different melodies and the different harmonies. And I think that's what draws me to you as well in your music, is the fact
Thank
that
you.
You can tell there's that knowledge behind the songwriting, and then there's the image, like you mentioned, imagery. Straight away, I was taken into a car in my mind. It's like, yep, perfect. That fits all the criteria. And yeah, I'm really excited for the new EP.
Thank you. I really do appreciate it. And I sort of want people to sit there and think, well, this is a really cool song, and this is an even better guitar solo. Because, like, I'm a sucker for guitar solos. Yeah. I absolutely love them. And my guitar player, I just let him go ham. I just go, go on, come up with something nice. And he comes up with these really beautiful solos. And the solo in Whiplash, you know, it's got a lot of attention, which is really cool. And I want people to sort of feel that, you know, you don't have to, you don't, it's not uncool to like country music. It's very cool to like country music. And because it's so heavily influenced with like classic rock as well, I want people to feel that. And there's a song on the record coming out soon that's got like a Motown beat. I turned around to Danny, I went, I want it to do this, a bum bum, a bum bum. And he was like Motown. I was like, yes, exactly like that.
You're teasing me now. This is horrible.
It's coming, don't worry.
I mean, Saturday, it's not going to come quick enough now.
Well, you see, I mean, you won't get to hear it on Saturday, but you will hear one of the songs that one of the songs acoustically, yeah, and you will at least know what it's called and all sorts. So it's getting there.
Yeah. Well, I say Saturday to find out when the actual release is and all the information, mm-hmm, that goes with it. And I'm looking forward to checking it out and writing a review on it as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. We'll get that sent over. And you can be as honest as ever.
I am always honest. Even when people don't agree with me, you know, I might think something's fantastic and other people think it's a bit meh. Mm-hmm. If I think it's good, I'll write good things.
Oh, well, there you go.
So that's all that matters. It's me and the listeners. That's all that matters.
I just want people to enjoy it. Like, all I take away from it is someone to turn around and say, do you know what? That's made my day, that has. Like, this one song or these few selections of songs. I don't care if it's massively successful. It'd be nice. It'd be a great bonus.
Yeah.
But moreover, I want someone to just say that they've enjoyed it, yeah, and truly mean it. And then I'm happy. My job's been done. I've done it.
I mean, you must be, like we mentioned earlier, must have been such a great, great feeling seeing it go to number one and thinking, yeah, this is, I can do this now for the rest of my life.
It's crazy. God, I just can't believe it. And I just hope that the EP has a similar success and that people don't think I'm just a one-trick pony, because the songs on the EP are a little bit, like, one of them's quite similar to Whiplash, but the other two are a little bit different. They show different sides, but it's not too much of a headache.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, for example, spoiler alert, I'm not throwing out, like, a disco track, yeah, although that would be great. But it would make you think, why? Yeah. Why is there a disco track next to this country song? Do you, yeah, know what I mean? So it's a good mix.
It all flows from track to track in a suitable way.
Yes, definitely. I'm dying to tell you about it, but I just can't yet.
I'm dying just to keep asking questions about it, just to see if you'll slip, but... Playing guitar, you play acoustic guitar, you've been playing it on your live sessions.
Mm-hmm.
When did you actually first start playing guitar? You play guitar fantastically.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. I don't really view myself as a great guitar player.
Really?
So I really do. Yeah. I'd say I'm okay. Like, but my biggest bugbear is I'm really bad at timing. So on the record, I don't actually play acoustic guitar on the record because I couldn't get it to time properly.
Yeah.
I'm dreadful with a click. Absolutely awful. I blame that more on the fact that I'm completely self-taught.
Yeah.
I had a few lessons, but I actually had an accident in school, so I couldn't go to school for a really long time.
Okay.
And I just used that time to play guitar.
Yeah.
I sort of learnt more stuff, and I've been playing solidly since I was about 12. So we're going on 12 years now.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I got given a guitar when I was 7, and I like sort of plucked at it, but didn't do anything with it. And it wasn't until I went to high school that they offered some guitar lessons, that I went and took some guitar lessons, then had my accident, so I was stuck with guitar for ages and ages. And yeah, it's just been one of those. And since lockdown, I've tried to commit an hour a day learning something new, like more scales and stuff. And I've got a friend called Jag Paltahili, who, if you don't know him, if you're really into guitar, you've got to check him out. He comes up with really beautiful, like quite experimental instrumental pieces.
Yeah,
he's absolutely amazing, and he's been giving me a few pointers and stuff, and I'm trying to get, he's going to be giving me a couple of guitar lessons too, like on scales and all sorts.
Okay.
But yeah, I've been playing for quite a while now. I'm not at the standard a lot of people would be at this stage, but I just like it. I just like to play guitar.
Well, considering that you just said that you're self-taught, it's, yeah, I wouldn't have known. I mean, there'll be other guitar players out there that'll be listening to you thinking, yeah, she's doing that a bit differently, but I can't, listening to it on the tracks and, well, listening to you playing live, should I say,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have thought, and I wouldn't have thought you were bad with timing either.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. It has improved since being in the studio because I really tried. Before I went down to track the guitar, I really tried to get the timing and play to a click.
Yeah.
But it, playing live and playing recorded is completely different because, like, one of the main reasons is that it's all mic'd up in a studio. And if you're, like, playing quite heavy, which I play, I'm quite heavy-handed and breaking strings all the time, it can not sound that great.
Yeah.
You have to know the balance. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not great at that. But hopefully by the time the next EP rolls around, I'll be at a standard where I might be able to play it.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
So you mentioned you had an accident. Can you, what happened there?
Yeah, so basically, it's all in the past now. It doesn't affect my life anymore, which is great. But when I was 12, my school, they were allowed to go out on lunch.
Yeah.
Like, once you were in year 8, you were allowed to go to the chip shop or the shop or whatever for lunch. And I went out and went down the road, and there was basically, like, all the cars were lined up, and there was a gap in the road, but it was on a curve. And I thought I'd saw everything, and I didn't, and I got hit. The guy stopped. He was the nicest man ever.
Yeah.
And he pulled over, called the ambulance, and I'd shattered my leg.
Oh, basically. Wow.
My tibia, fibula, the lot. It was really messy. They did loads of operations to try and fix it. They put in some metal work, some, like, plate, basically. And they said to me that I'd be fine after that. You know, that they've finally sorted it. This is about 3-4 months after the accident. I'm good to go now. Once the cast is off, I'll be ready to roll.
Yeah.
And I was, until about 5 months later. And I woke up and I was in a bit of pain. And my mum had taken me to, like, a bonfire display down the road.
Yeah.
And I was walking around and I just fell, just completely buckled. And the next morning, we found that I could barely walk.
Yeah.
So we went to the doctor and they'd found that my leg had moved completely out of place. So my ankle was like that. And it had grown that way because obviously you have to remember I was 13. I hadn't finished growing at this point.
Yeah.
So the worst possible time to break a bone because it will just grow and it will grow the wrong way if it hasn't been set properly. And it wasn't the doctor's fault. They did what they thought was best. You know, they couldn't have possibly seen that coming.
No.
So they turned around to me and they were like, this is what we need to do. We need to reset it somehow and we need to either put some more metal work in or you're going to have what's known as an external fixator, which is essentially they drill into the bone and they break the bone, drill, and reset it over a frame.
Yeah.
And you keep it on for a really long time. It's usually anywhere between 6 and 9 months. And mine, I had it on for about 3 and it hadn't grown properly again. Yeah. The bone had grown too quick yet again. So they had to break it again. And I'd had it on for quite a while at that point, and I had it removed, had my cast on, and then since that, it's been okay. I sometimes get some pains. Sometimes it gets quite weak. My ankle does. But the story is, at least I've got my leg.
Well, that's the main thing.
Do you know what I mean? So, and I've got my life, so that's all that matters. And I also got to play guitar for a lot because I couldn't go to school.
Well, at least it's put you in good stead towards your future career.
Well, exactly. And I think it made me realise, like, I can go and do stuff. Like, I can climb mountains. I can do whatever I like, really. I have to be sensible. Like, there's part of my leg that's by the tibia that's still a little bit weak.
Yeah.
So if I were to knock that specific piece, it could break it again. But I'd be careful where I'm careful. Yeah. If it happens, it happens. But, you know.
So you don't have to do all the heavy lifting for the band equipment or anything like that then?
Well, I try, but I'm like Mrs. No upper body strength at all. So I do try, it just doesn't work very well.
Yeah. So going on from the actual accident there and then obviously learning how to play guitar, at what point did it actually all start falling in place where you're thinking, yeah, I'm actually writing good songs here. This is the next way, this is where I'm going to go next with it.
So I'm not quite sure if I had that moment, if I'm really honest. I sort of like wrote songs and played about with it. Because I had a full-time job for quite a while, I didn't really get to gig or anything. And I had a bit of a moment in 2016 where I was having a crap year, basically.
Yeah.
I was just feeling really low. I felt like nothing was improving. I was going through a bit of stuff and I was feeling really crap. And I went, right, okay, I'm going to go to India now. So I decided to just go to India. I don't know why, okay. But there was someone telling me on my shoulder, you need to go to this country. You have to go there. So I went, okay. I booked a flight and it cleared my head completely. I just felt better in myself.
Yeah.
And before that, I decided to make a resurgence on the open mic scene about 3 months before I went to India. And I'd met some really cool people who I still hang out with to this day, who sort of made me feel that I could go and pursue it more and that I should write more because they like what I wrote.
Yeah.
I went to India, I come back, felt immediately better about myself, and I decided I'm going to have a job, so I've got money, but I'm going to open mic as much as I can. I'm going to gig where anyone will have me, even if it's a little dive bar and there's one person, I don't care. I'm going to go everywhere I can. It just went from there. I started gigging and gigging and gigging. And it just sort of happened. Danny messaged me.
Yeah.
Because he'd found me somehow. And I think it might have been from like a live stream or something maybe. And it went from there. I went down to the studio. And I think by someone telling me that they wanted to work with me, it made me think, you know what? It's not just my mom who thinks I'm good. It's not just my friends. Like, maybe I can actually do it. Yeah. And now I think I've realised there's no point being afraid. Like, there's no point sitting there thinking, oh, what if I don't make it? Who cares if you don't make it? You've written something that means something to you.
Yeah.
Like, so, and I'm happy and that's all that matters. So I feel like now I'm just going to give it, like, 10 barrels. I'm just going to go mad, mad, mad and just work as hard as I can and write all the songs. And if people don't like it, they don't like it, but hopefully I can send a message to someone and make them feel something and make them happy. And, yeah, we'll see how it goes from there. If I get big success, then great. If I don't get big success, at least I've tried.
Well, my fingers are crossed for you anyhow. I mean, what did you do in India? Like, what was what was your events throughout the days there?
So, basically, how it worked is that before I booked it, I found a really cheap flight and I didn't question myself as to why it was so cheap. The answer to that is that I went in June, which is the hottest possible time to go in India.
Yeah.
I was melting. Because if you can't see, I'm very, very, very pale. So yeah. I burn quite easily. And that's why my flight was so cheap. but I didn't realise this. And by the time I'd went to India and when I'd booked my flight, I had a few months to create a rough plan of what I wanted to do. And I was like, well, I'm going to Delhi, so what would I like to see? I'd like to see the Taj Mahal.
Okay.
That's like the main thing I want to go see. So I planned a day to go to Agra, which is where the Taj Mahal actually is. It's about 3 hours away from Delhi.
Yeah.
So I went to that. And also where Taj Mahal is, there's a place called the Red Fort, which is really, really cool. So I went there and I just sort of picked a few places in and around Delhi that were really pretty.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was a place called Jaipur, which is beautiful. It's, if you're wondering why you've heard that before, it's because it's called the Pink City.
Yeah.
And I just did a bit of traveling. I looked around Delhi for a few of the days. Every day I'd pick somewhere new that I'd not been to. So they've got beautiful parks and gardens in Delhi. It's crazy. For a place that a lot of people might think is quite polluted, you wouldn't believe it looking at the gardens.
Yeah.
The gardens are really nice. So I just sort of went in and around everywhere, just wandered about with a little bit of a plan, but not a diehard plan. Tried a lot of the food, tried to go to quite a few local places. And I just, it was what I needed. It was medicine.
Yeah.
I really, really needed it. And it cleared my head completely. And I think I was just feeling a bit low. And I went to India and it was almost as if someone waved a magic wand.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. It felt like someone had just gone, you're better now, come to your senses. That's literally how it felt.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I wish I had the guts to just pack a bag and say, yep, I'm going.
I did scare my parents, to be fair.
I think mine would be scared as well. So what was their reaction then when you said, all right, I'm going to India. I'll see you in I don't know how long.
I think they were relieved that it wasn't Ghana, because that was my original plan, was to go to Ghana.
Oh, yeah.
Because I sort of wanted to work with like a charity and work with like refugees and like children and stuff. Like that's what I wanted to, like almost like a volunteer thing, yeah, basically.
Very selfless.
Wanted to do. And my parents, I've always grown up having quite an independent life and they've always been really, really supportive and they've never said no. They've never gone, don't do that. Apart from Ghana.
Yeah.
My mum was like, you're 21. You're probably not ready for that.
Yeah.
And I was like, fair enough. But, you know, grown my whole life and they've never said that. So I was like, well, if they're saying it, it's pretty serious. So I decided to go somewhere else. And like I said, there was a voice inside my head that was saying, go to India. So I said to my parents, this is where I'm going. I'm going on my own. But I'm going to do this tour and this tour, like a little tourist like thingy, which is what I did for Jaipur and Taj Mahal. This is where I'm going. This is where I'm staying. I'm aware it's not like the safest place in the world, but nowhere is really. Yeah. You know, you've just got to be sensible wherever you go. But I need to do this. And they went, okay. And they met me at the airport on my way back and they were glad to see I was in one piece.
Yeah.
But I made it an effort to just talk to them every day, let them know what I was doing. And they were shocked. And I'm aware that they were absolutely terrified the whole time I was there.
Yeah.
But they let me do it because I needed to do it.
How long were you there for?
I was there for 4 weeks.
4 weeks?
So it wasn't a really long time, but it was long enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would go back because I've not seen the south of India at all. So I'd like to go back to the south, which is like Goa and things like that. But I'd happily go back, but it's a beautiful country. And 4 weeks was, it's almost like it was a breath of fresh air. It's what I needed.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad I did it, really.
That's awesome. And it's scary at the same time. It's I'm listening to this in awe, like, wow, I just wish I had the, like I say, the guts to just go. And yeah, fantastic for you. Have you been anywhere else or is it just in?
Yeah, so I love to travel. I've got the traveling bug. I love it.
Yeah.
And I will go anywhere. You know how a lot of people have that button in their brain that goes, don't do that. I don't really have that. I'm just like, I'm going to go and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it's because like, I feel that there's always a lot more to offer than what you might see on the outside.
Yeah.
So I'll pretty much go anywhere. But sometimes I do have some bad luck. So I went to Bali.
Okay.
During the earthquakes. I didn't know. Like, I knew what I'd done. Before I booked my travel insurance, I deliberately spent a lot of extra money on the travel insurance, making sure I got natural disaster cover.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'm going to this part of the world. There's likely to be some type of like geothermal activity, whether it's like, you know, earthquakes or whatever. It's better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going to have some travel insurance to cover this just in case I miss out on in any way. And then I got there, and about 3 days later, we were eating dinner because it was a big group of us because it was called the Bali Adventure, and they do like tours around Bali. It's really good. And it was a lot of British people. I think there was one or two people who weren't, but it's mainly like British because you might find it advertised a lot on Facebook. That's how I found it, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all sitting there. We're all like eating dinner, and then all of a sudden the table moved. And all of our dinners fell to the floor.
Oh, and I was like,
I was the only calm one. Everyone was like, like really worried. And I was like, well, you're in a place where there's geothermal activity. You can't be too surprised. And I think I just decided I was extremely calm. And at this point in the UK, it had hit the news that the island next to Bali, Lombok, had been hit by quite a nasty earthquake. And that's what we felt. We felt the aftershock, essentially. And, you know, sent my parents and my friends into panic mode. They were like, oh, God, what's happened? And we didn't really have much after that until the day before the last day. So we were staying in a hotel and I was on the top floor.
Yeah.
And I actually got food poisoning and I was really ill and I'd passed out. And I woke up because the earthquake woke me up. So, like, this earthquake was going. And the only reason I woke up is because all my shampoo fell to the floor.
Oh, no.
And I was like, what's that? And then I noticed that the wardrobe had hit the wall.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll probably get out of here. And I ran downstairs and the rest of the tour were waiting for me. And they were like, where were you? I was like, I was passed out. So,
are you a heavy sleeper or?
Well, I was really ill.
Yeah.
So I think that was why, like, I'd eaten something. I'm not sure what it was. That it just really disagreed with me. Because the tour had gone out to, like a buffet. Type thing, and I was like, I need to go back to the hotel. I feel vile.
Yeah,
and I was really ill, and I passed out. So I think that's what it was. And it wasn't until the earthquake started happening that I woke up.
Yeah,
basically, and I'd ran down, and we were supposed to be going to the Gili Islands, which is a beautiful part of Bali, which you definitely have heard of.
Yeah,
and we couldn't go to that because it was part of the tour, but the Lombok earthquake had destroyed the Gili Islands and collapsed the hotel we were supposed to be staying in.
Yeah, I remember when all that happened.
So yeah, that is basically what happened. I had a wonderful time in Bali. I wouldn't change it for the world, but it was just typical that a place I decided to go has an earthquake.
Look at the dice, really. Look at the roll.
Exactly.
So where's your favourite place to go then? Is that your, where's your favourite holiday destination there? If you was to book a holiday now, where would it be?
This might surprise a lot of people, but I have three places in mind. And one of them is Italy. My heart lives in Italy. I love it there.
Okay.
Like, it's a beautiful country. It has beautiful food. There is so much to do. And every part of Italy is completely, it will offer you something new.
Yeah.
Like, it's wonderful. I'd go back there in a heartbeat. I've been quite a few times. I love it there. And weirdly, like, people will find this really strange now that I've mentioned, like, India and Bali, whatever. I will always happily go on holiday to Weston-super-Mare.
Really?
I love it. Like, I will not hear a bad word against it. A lot of people might think it's a dive and that it's an old, like, seaside-y resort and that it's all tatty and horrible now. But it's not. And I love it. And I've been going there since I was a baby. So I love it.
There you go. It's got a sentimental value for you.
Oh, 100%. Like, if you said to me, here's £1 million, put a house anywhere in the world, I'd have a house in Weston. I love it there.
Yeah. Well, you never know. Fingers crossed, soon you'll be able to do that.
Oh, amazing. I'd love that. I'd be happy with that, a little house in Weston.
So talking about money, what is your full-time job now then, other than doing music?
So I run social media and marketing for a estate agent.
Okay.
Basically. It's nothing too glamorous. It's quite a small company. And I just run their Facebooks and their Instagrams, and I make sure that we get out there in the paper and stuff as well.
Yeah.
So it's quite cool, actually. It's quite nice to do. It's quite a nice job. It's not a big office. There's quite a small number of staff.
Yeah.
None of us are working at the moment, obviously, because of what's going on. Some people are working from home, and I post when I can and stuff. So, yeah.
That's awesome. That's quite a quirky job, that. I've never thought of the social media side of an estate agent.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you think about it, like, when you look for a house or a flat or whatever, it will be the marketing department of that company that will put it on there.
Yeah.
So it, in a way, it makes sense, but I was just as surprised when, because I was previously a waitress and I needed a job. So I called up like a recruitment people and they were like, well, there's this job at an estate agent. And I was like, I don't know anything about property. And they were like, no, you'll just be doing the social media and stuff. And I was like,
down. Fair enough. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, last music question, and it's going back to your, I keep mentioning it, the Nashville Meets World. Mm-hmm. You did a couple of covers on there. You did like Better Man by Little Big Town. Yes. What's your favourite cover that you can do?
Oh, that's a good one. I really like to do My Church by Mary Morris because it often gets people going. People love it. So I like to do that one. But then I love a song where I can give, like, I can have a bit of a belt.
Yeah.
Or a bit of a high note. So I like to do Before He Cheats.
Oh, I love that song.
By Carrie Underwood. Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Just fires people up.
I mean, all of her songs, you know, like Drinking Alone and...
Oh, classic.
Dirty Laundry. Carrie's just fantastic.
It's just so sassy, isn't it? Like, it just makes you want to parade down the road, like, slashing tyres. Not that I do that, but it makes you want to do that.
Not going to generalise people from Birmingham, because I'm one of them. you got My Church and you got Before He Cheats. Do you perform them at any gigs or...?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the moment, because I'm sort of just starting out with my original stuff in a way, because obviously this is the first time I've had something actually recorded that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Because I'm sort of starting that journey out. I've been doing gigs for a while, but they're cover gigs. So I do like a mixed bag of stuff, basically. Just stuff that people want to hear.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've gone to a pub or whatever, it's Saturday afternoon, it's Saturday evening, and you've had a few. You want to hear the songs that you know. So I do throw Before He Cheats in quite a bit because a lot of people actually know that song.
Yeah.
Which is quite wild to think. My Church, I would generally always do. But I tend to stick to quite generic covers.
Yeah.
If it's like a cover gig. But for gigs where I've been booked as myself, like, for example, there's a great pub I love to play. In Bedworth in Coventry called the Cross Keys.
Yeah.
A great guy called Mark who runs that pub, he's amazing. And I just sing what I like there because, like, he's happy with whatever I do. So I do a lot of my own stuff there as well.
Do you ever go to, like, pubs to perform gigs and they say, okay, then this is the kind of people that are coming. Can you perform something like this, something like this, something like this? Or have you got free rein?
Depends. Sometimes it's free. If they know me quite well, it's free rein. I can do what I like.
Yeah.
And I usually will judge the audience and see what I think they'll like.
Yeah.
And I'll kind of go on that. There's quite a few ones that I do for a company. And they usually send like a rough set list as like a rough idea of the type of songs that they would like to hear. Sometimes I get gigs off a page called The Circle.
Okay.
And usually they'll give like a little lowdown of what they want going up. So they'll sometimes say, we're looking for an 80s act. We're looking for someone who can do country and Western covers, you know, something like that. And if I think it's in my wheelhouse, I'll go and do it. Because gigging's gigging, isn't it? Like, there might be someone there who really enjoys what you're doing.
Yeah. Plus, when you go to, like, somebody that wants to do country or Western, Do you ever get the opportunity to try and drop one of yours in, or is it just a case of you can only perform what they say?
I sneak them in. They don't say that I can't. So I'm like, well, if I can't, then I'll do it anyway.
Yeah.
Because usually I'll just say, oh, there's this song. Sometimes I won't say that I've written it just to see if people like it. Do you know what I mean? So I'll sneak in something that fits.
Yeah.
For example. But if it's a country and western gig, I will usually try and put as much as my own stuff in as I can because I'm a country singer, so I sort of fit the bill.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's brilliant. All right. So what I normally do towards the end of the podcast or at the end of the podcast is I ask a couple of quick fire questions, like what kind of things you like, what things you don't. And I've got a couple here. So are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
So if you had to choose, we mentioned it earlier, tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Coffee? Even though you had a cup of tea?
It's because if I can't have, I'm a coffee snob, so if it's instant coffee, I'm not going anywhere near it.
Yeah.
And they've only got instant coffee at the office.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you prefer? Do you prefer percolator or do you prefer like a French press or?
So I have both.
Yeah.
I have both a percolator and a French press, and I also have a stovetop too. So that's how much of a coffee snob I am.
Stovetop? But I'm not seeing one of them like in the shops or anything to buy. Where do you?
You can sometimes get them. To be fair,
yeah,
they're just rarer than the others. But if you want one, get one on Amazon.
Yeah, totally worth it.
Oh yeah, 100%. If you like strong coffee, then it's definitely worth it. Oh,
I love strong coffee. You like coffee? Do you have biscuits with it?
Sometimes.
What biscuits would they be?
Oh, it's got to be a chocolate digestive or a hobnob.
Hobnobs. They're proper dunking biscuits, then.
They are. They're so robust.
Yeah.
You can dip as many times as you like.
See, so, growing up, I used to love rich teas, but they always used to...
They flake away, don't they?
Yeah. As soon as you dunk it in, they scream. I mean, there's a Peter Kay comedy joke, I think it was, about... Oh, no, was it Lee Evans? Did a joke about it or something, about how weak they actually are. All right, so we've got chocolate digestives or hobnobs. So what about alcohol? Do you have a drink?
I do. I'm a whiskey girl.
A whiskey girl? What kind of whiskeys?
So I'm a bourbon girl mainly.
Yeah.
But American whiskey in general. I do like scotch, but it has to be a really good quality one. Otherwise, I'm not a fan. I'm not a big fan of blended at all. I like a single malt if it's a scotch.
Yeah.
Single batch as well usually, but if it's a bourbon, then Bullet every day. It's my favorite. Absolutely love Bullet bourbon. It's my favorite. But then I'll happily have like Wild Turkey, Meg's Mark. I do really like Jack Daniels. I know compared to those, it's a bit trashier. But I do like Jack Daniels. I can't deny.
You see, I love Jack Daniels, especially like the Gentleman Jack. It's a bit smoother.
Well, this is what I mean. Like, Gentleman Jack is beautiful. It's a really good, it's really nice.
But if I was to choose, it'd be Maker's Mark.
Hey.
See, that's my favourite drink.
Maker's Mark's beautiful.
It is. I mean, Maker's Mark you can drink neat. No issues, yeah. No burn. I mean, I shouldn't really talk about alcohol. You know, who knows might be listening. The great thing with podcasts is it lasts forever, but I love having a drink. I love winding down with a nice little drink.
You can't go wrong.
So with Maker's Mark, you Bullet. Do you go to a pub or a club?
Oh, I cannot do clubs. I'm a bar every day of the week.
Yeah.
Well, not every day of the week, but I will pick a bar or a pub over a club pretty much every time. The only club I like is Pop World.
Fair enough. So we've got a pub. Now with a pub, you got your Bullet whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have mixes with it? Or do you drink it
straight? Generally, I'll drink it straight over ice. Like, that's how I like my bourbon.
Yeah.
But occasionally, if I feel like I want to slow it down a little bit, I'll have it with, like, ginger ale and, like, a little bit of lime wedge.
Oh, yeah.
Really nice.
See, I know it's about you, but I can't stand ginger.
Really?
I can't.
See, I don't... It doesn't surprise me because I would say it's an acquired taste. But because it's quite fiery, if you mix it with whiskey, it... like accentuates the burn, so that's why I like it.
Yeah, see, I can drink like fireballs, you know.
Oh yeah,
spicy
cinnamon whiskey, amazing.
But actual like fiery ginger ale. I can't. Yeah. Going on from there, we've now gone through the process of where we go. To finish the night, do you like fast food?
Yes. So controversial. I have gone off Domino's lately. I'm not a big fan.
Okay.
And I used to be, but I don't know what it is. I've just gone off it. But for me, if this was a thing in the UK, which it isn't really, but I wish it was, I'm a big fan of Mexican food.
Yeah.
So like a big, like burrito, amazing, big fan, or chicken wings.
See, next time you're in Leeds, there's a, in the Trinity Centre, there's a place called Tortilla, where they do...
You've got one in Birmingham?
They do fajitas and burritos, and there's also the other chain, Bar Burrito.
Ooh, okay.
So Bar Burrito is fantastic for their, they've got really nice pork.
Oh, lovely.
But yeah, so at least we've got something. And the slightly trashier version, Taco Bell.
Yeah, we just don't have any in Birmingham and it makes me really sad. And Tortilla closes at 8.
Oh no, that's horrible. How dare they?
I'm like, give me my food at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, so the final comparison question is, what would you rather do? Eat at get a fast food or would you rather go to a restaurant?
Oh, I think it depends. Like, if it's a burrito, I can just take it. Yeah. I can just run away with it. But if it's, like, a nice meal, like a sit-down meal, then I will always pick quite a nice restaurant. Because I like, more than just, like, sitting down, I like having conversations, like, just sitting there and talk.
Yeah.
Nice.
So now you've got to choose.
Oh, I don't know if I can. I'd probably pick dine-in, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where would you dine in? Where's your kind of nicer restaurant?
So there's a chain called Hickory Smokehouse that I absolutely love. It's American barbecue food, so you can't go wrong. Brisket, mac and cheese, beautiful. All that type of business. But then also, I feel like I'm very much a person who has two sides. Like, I love that. But then there's an absolutely amazing restaurant in Birmingham called Cucina Rustica, which is a beautiful Italian restaurant. Like, it's amazing. It's really high quality and it's actually really reasonable for what you get.
Really?
And as soon as this is over, I am heading straight there.
Oh, I don't blame you. First thing I'm doing is going to the social club and actually meeting all my friends again.
I just like, it's been so long.
Just miss it all. It's so crazy at the moment. Well, thanks for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It's been fun.
No, thanks for having me on. I've really enjoyed myself.
Is there anything else you'd like to add? We just need to add in your socials. So where can we find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at CharlotteY_96.
Yep.
And I had to remember that then. And then on Instagram, you can find me on Charlotte Young Music. On Facebook, you can find me as Charlotte Young. It should pop up, hopefully.
Yeah.
If you do have any trouble, just put Charlotte Young Country and it should definitely come up. And yeah, the only thing I'd like to add is a really cheeky little plug, which is I am nominated for UK Country Singer of the Year, UK Female Country Singer of the Year, and Artist of the Year. And that's at the UK Country Music Awards.co.uk. So if you feel like being really nice and voting for me, please do that. But if not, don't worry about it. That's great.
Awesome. Yeah, I wanted to. I was going to do your socials for you, you know, actually say it out loud, but it's always your Twitter one that always gets me.
Because Charlotte Young Music wasn't available.
How dare they? We need to tell other Charlotte Young off.
Well, you see, I did think about this. Do I message the other Charlotte Young and see if she'll let me have it? But
you never know.
I don't think they've been active for years. So.
You see, that's what I wanted with Country Chat, but I had to go for Country _ Chat. It was. Yeah, it was...
It's a nightmare.
It's horrible. Well, thanks for coming on, Charlotte. It's been, like I say, it's been lovely talking to you. And I hope you have a lovely rest of your day.
Oh, and you. Thank you very much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Okay, take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
That was the Country Chat Podcast.
Join Dom next time for exclusive interviews, reviews, and general chit-chat on all things country music.